President Trump tweeted yesterday morning that he and President Xi Jinping of China will always be friends, no matter what happens with our dispute on trade. It's unclear from Twitter whether the president was suggesting that progress had been made in solving the trade dispute between the world's two biggest economies. It is the 9th of April. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What is clear is that many farmers in the Midwest are worried. The escalating trade tensions with China threaten markets for soybeans, threaten markets for corn, other crops like ginseng. We're exploring the impact with Joseph Daniels. He chairs the economics department at Marquette University, directs the Center for Global and Economic Studies. Joseph, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, so we got the tweets over the weekend, the president saying that China will take down its trade barriers, taxes will become reciprocal, and that a deal could be reached on intellectual property disputes. But last week, things weren't so upbeat. Can you bring us up to speed on the story?
Yes. So this all kicked off with the tariffs on imported aluminum and steel, and China retaliated with a relative sense, tariffs on a small range of goods was around $3 billion. Following that retaliation, then President Trump proposed tariffs again on about $50 billion worth of imports from China. China proposed retaliation again, and then President Trump upped the ante to about $100 billion worth of goods. So basically, you could look at it as being three rounds of word warfare. The first round, however, the tariffs on imported steel and aluminum, and then China's tariffs on about $3 billion worth of dollars of good, that went into effect. The other two rounds were just words of war, just proposed, hasn't taken effect yet. You'll notice that some of the cabinet members and administration members were kind of walking it back a little bit, saying it was just a proposal, you know, likely won't happen, putting a little bit softer tone on it. And so that brings us up to where we are today.
Very nice. Quick summary there. Yesterday, U.S. Secretary of the Treasury Steve Mnuchin made an appearance on CBS's Face of the Nation. This is what he had to say about the relationship between China and the U.S.
Our objective is free and fair trade. We've been talking about this for the last year with them. It's actually just about a year anniversary since the president's meeting at Mar-a-Lago. And I think the good news is President Xi and President Trump have shared with the economic teams, we have a common objective to make sure we reduce the trade deficit. But President Trump is prepared to defend U.S. interests.
So Steve Mnuchin there tamping down concerns considerably in that clip. What do you make of how he has answered to this escalating so-called trade war?
I would say that's a fairly moderated response. Of course, the administration is getting a lot of blowback from people even within their own party on this. A lot of pressure from Republicans, especially in Trump, you know, stronghold states. You know, think about the Plains states, for example. However, it's Peter Navarro who has Trump's ear, and he is a very anti-China, anti-trade, kind of bombastic in his words. And if you watched him over the weekend, it was a little bit stronger tone than Mnuchin.
Let's listen to him, Peter Navarro, who is the director of the White House National Trade Council.
What do you say to the criticism you're getting from the Midwestern senators and governors of both sides of the aisle who are panicked about the agricultural industry?
Let me be very, very clear about this. When the president announced the additional $100 billion in tariffs, he also announced that he was directing Sonny Perdue, a great American, and the Secretary of Agriculture to immediately implement a plan to defend American farmers.
Does that mean buying soybean crops? Does that mean buying soybean crops that the Chinese won't buy?
It's up to Sonny Perdue and the president to implement the plan. The details of that plan will be rolled out.
So that is NBC's Meet the Press host Chuck Todd. They're pressing him on concerns from the heartland. He went on to say that China is being cynical instead of simply changing its trade practices. What can the American government do to ease the potential pain of these tariffs?
Well, first of all, I thought his comments, and I watched it twice because I couldn't believe that Navarro said it, to say that Sonny Perdue is going to come up with a plan to protect American farmers, I'm not sure what that would be. Regardless of whatever it's going to be, it will be a cost to the American taxpayer. If it's buying surplus crop, that's going to be a cost to the American taxpayer. One of the avenues we could have had, especially for soybean farmers, is to promote more trade with Mexico and South America. But because Trump has been almost anti-Mexico from the start, but in particular he's been very negative on NAFTA, and it's in limbo right now, we've kind of shot ourselves in the foot before this trade war even broke out.
So we'll get to NAFTA in a moment, but what is the president's motive here then? What is he trying to accomplish?
I think it's a very good question. I think that the steel and aluminum tariffs were intended to protect what, in a sense, is a fairly small segment of our workforce, not overall production, but of our workforce. And I think that was to cater a little bit to his base. What followed from that, though, I think is a bit more chest-thumping. It's a little bit more ego-driven. It could very well be that it's Trump's strategy to keep upping the ante and see if China will blink first. Maybe it's his negotiation strategy. I'm not really sure. Whatever it is, what followed the steel and aluminum tariffs has just been wrong. It's created all kinds of uncertainty. It's affected the stock market. It's even affecting the industry that I work in negatively right now.
We're exploring the impact of tariffs with Joseph Daniels. He chairs the economics department at Marquette University. He directs the Center for Global and Economic Studies. You can join in with your questions, your insights, your reaction. Do you think the U.S. should impose tariffs on China? Are you worried about the effects retaliation from the Chinese could have on the U.S. economy? Do you think the U.S. and China are making empty threats, or do you think it could turn into an actual trade war? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Joe, the administration has said these tariffs are intended to prevent China from breaking international trade rules. Can you delve into that strategy for us?
Yeah, if they're breaking international trade rules, then he would be referring to trade rules of the WTO. And the trade rules of the WTO, of course, WTO came about following GATT. And these institutions were primarily U.S. created. Many of the rules were U.S. generated. And so there is a forum where if we have concerns about a particular industry, so let's say, for example, in steel. The problem with the steel industry is that there's overcapacity of steel production facilities globally. And many economies will, many countries will subsidize those industries. That can be brought to the WTO, and action can be taken that way. What Donald Trump is doing is trying to go out on his own and do it outside of that particular framework. And that's where we are today. And I think that's ill-advised. In addition, his authority to do that was actually granted to him by Congress. And I think Congress needs to play a bigger role in what's going on right now.
How far-reaching could these tariffs impact the economy? I mean, we've seen markets go pretty berserk last week, but nothing has really, really sunk in yet. How could the U.S. economy be impacted, and how could the world economy be impacted by these two huge global world powers in economics have a trade war?
Well, first, all you have to do is to think back prior to the Great Depression and the Smoot-Hawley tariff wars. This is the kind of scale that our words are at right now. Of course, that had a huge detrimental impact, not only in the United States, but on the global economy. Where we are today, China is one of the largest economies in the world, has a growing marketplace. It's a marketplace that U.S. producers want access to, and this is working against that. So to have the two largest economies in the world fighting over trade, that's going to have detrimental impact across the globe, not just for the United States, not just for China, not just the state of Wisconsin, but globally.
Let's listen to President Trump last Friday talking about the market's reaction to the threats of a trade war.
We've already lost the trade war. We don't have a trade war. We've lost the trade war because for many years, whether it's Clinton or the Bushes or Obama, all of our presidents before have, for some reason, it just got worse and worse. And now it's $500 billion in deficits.
$500 billion in deficits. So he's seeing that this has been a trade war all along.
Well, let's start with the $500 billion in deficits. That is incorrect. And Peter Navarro actually got the data right this weekend when he was on the Sunday morning shows. I think, let's say that Trump is using a figure to try to make the problem look bigger than what it really is. We have $500 billion in imports from China, not a deficit. We also have over $130 billion worth of exports in goods to China, and we have almost $60 billion worth of exports of services to China, while we only import about $18 billion in services. So we have a surplus on services. Overall, the balance with China is a deficit, and it is very large. It's a little more than $300 billion in 2017. But I think there's two really important things to keep in mind. First of all, China imports an awful lot of goods, adds value to it, and then re-exports it. So let's say, for example, they import a $45 component from Malaysia and a $45 component from Indonesia. And they take those two components and they assemble them, and they add value in terms of assembly of about $10. They turn around, they export that to the United States, we're going to record a $100 deficit, the two $45 components and the $10 worth of labor assembly. Well, if you think about that for a moment, our real deficit with China is only $10. We have a $45 deficit with Taiwan, or who'd I use, Indonesia and Malaysia, a $45 deficit with each. Now, in that example I just gave you, it's all in Southeast Asia. But if you take, for example, products like some high-tech electronics, the iPhone and so on, there are a lot of parts that are actually made by U.S. companies that are shipped to China for assembly. And China adds very little value in terms of assembly, but we record a very large deficit with them. So to put this in a little bit better context, about 35% of what China exports are simply products that they imported, added some value, and then re-exported them. And that overinflates that $300 billion deficit that we have with China. So in 2017, it ran about $338 billion. You'll notice that was the number, actually, that Peter Navarro used over the weekend, and that is the correct figure. So Donald Trump is actually inflating the problem. Now, that said, it has been very difficult for U.S. producers to get China to follow the rules of the road. There is no doubt that there is intellectual property theft. It is a problem that has, for many U.S. producers, they say the problem has been declining, but that it is very true that that existed in the past and exists today. It's still a problem today. So I think that President Trump is correct to point out that we have a problem with, first, China following all the rules of the WTO, and second, the theft of intellectual property. Now, going back to the first, the U.S. doesn't follow all the rules of the WTO either. So it's a little bit hypocritical to be casting stones on that. I think the focus, however, on intellectual property rights is well placed, and there should be action taken on that.
In the midst of the latest tariff announcements, U.S. Representative Ron Kind of the 3rd Congressional District, he held several town meetings where farmers from the dairy, corn, and soybean industries pleaded for relief. Farmers are at the center of the latest tariff proposed by China that targets U.S. agricultural goods. We're talking about an escalating trade war here on The Morning Show. Joe Daniels stays with us. He chairs the economics department at Marquette University, directs the Center for Global and Economic Studies. You can join in with your questions, your insights, 800-642-1234. Do you think the U.S. should impose tariffs on China? Are you worried about the effects retaliation from the Chinese could have on our economy? Are you a farmer? What would be a trade war for you? What would that mean? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. On Friday, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin acknowledged the potential of a trade war in an interview with CNBC. But then yesterday morning on Face the Nation, Mnuchin did not comment on whether discussions with China had advanced. We're talking about the rising tensions with China and whether the world's two largest economies can work things out. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Joe Daniels is chair of the economics department at Marquette University. He stays with us. He directs the Center for Global and Economic Studies at Marquette. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you agree with President Trump that China is an economic predator and has taken advantage of the U.S.? Or do you think the U.S. has a good trade relationship with China and that we should maintain that relationship? Do you think that the U.S. should impose stiffer tariffs on China? Are you worried about this tit-for-tat? And are you a ginseng farmer in Wisconsin or a farmer of other crops? What do you think about all this? Are you concerned? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Joe Daniels, let's talk about farming here. We've been experiencing some consequences of China's tariffs on American products. Last week, China issued a 15% tariff on ginseng, Wisconsin being the world's leading ginseng exporter to China. So how could this move impact ginseng farmers in the state?
This would have a very detrimental impact on ginseng farmers in Wisconsin. As you pointed out, Wisconsin accounts for about 90 to 95% of all the ginseng production in the United States. So their tariff goes directly to Wisconsin. Of their total production, about 85% of it goes to China. So, you know, that market is very reliant on China. So the 15% tariff would be very detrimental. And there's about, according to the Ginseng Growers Board, there's about 200 producers, roughly, in the state of Wisconsin. The overall production, it's a non-traditional category, so it's difficult to get really good data on the overall production. But, of course, it's, you know, in the millions and millions of dollars.
Let's explore row crops. How would this impact soybeans or corn, for instance, other row crops?
I think soybeans could take a double hit here. With Trump requesting to renegotiate NAFTA and, of course, all of the back and forth across the border with Mexico, Mexico's a big consumer of soybeans from the United States. And because of that uncertainty, they're looking to source more of their soybean consumption from countries south of them, such as Brazil. Then you add on top of that, you know, the tariffs on soybeans, corn, wheat flour, and so on, it's almost like a double hit. And so that is not going to be good for soybean farmers in the United States.
So if these tariffs go through, would these farmers then go to the bank and say, I can't keep up with my loans? Or, I mean, how could this impact their bottom line?
Well, if they don't sell their crop, it's going to be very difficult to make payments on, you know, their capital equipment, their seeds, their fertilizer, all of that. It's going to be very difficult. They're going to turn to the U.S. government. They're going to turn to our various agriculture programs. And that is what Navarro was referring to when he was speaking about Sonny Perdue. You know, they're pretty extensive subsidies within our agricultural sector. Most advanced economies do that. It's one of the areas where we always run into conflict with WTO rules. And so I would imagine that the government would have to then turn around and subsidize farmers by surplus grain, for example. Hopefully work very hard to revitalize some other export markets so those products could be sold.
Dairy, another huge industry here in Wisconsin. What kind of impact would these tariffs have on dairy? Or do we know?
We don't know, because if you think about it as an economist for a moment, it has the potential for the price of some grains that might have been going to consumers can now be used as feed for dairy cattle. So some input costs would go down. The same thing would happen with beef. But on the other hand, demand for the product is going to decline because of the proposed tariffs. So there's both the good and the bad. I think it will also have, not only we have a number of Wisconsin dairy farmers, but we do a lot of processing of dairy products, adding value to dairy products, making cheese, let's say, for example. And so those producers are going to be hurt as well.
Let's bring in Mike now, who is a dairy farmer. Mike and Edgar. Hi, go ahead.
Hello. Here. The question I have is, you know, I heard last week Trump giving one of his daily stump speeches about the main problem he has and the reason he's creating this whole uproar is because of theft of intellectual property, okay, from our American companies. And the way I understand it is China's making these companies agree to give controlling basically 51% interest in their technologies and this to be able to get into that market, you know, get the Chinese market and get into there. And basically, so what I get out of this is because of the greed of those companies wanting to get into that market, they make it sound like it's a theft. It's these people making a poor decision on wanting to get over there and get that market. And then us as farmers or any person out here in the Midwest that's going to suffer from tariffs, and you know what's going to happen, we're paying a price for somebody's poor decision, some big guy's decision. Well, you know, us people are never going to make a dime off intellectual property as far as I can see. And I would, you know, correct me if I'm wrong on the thinking here.
Mike, you see a domino effect. Joe Daniels, how extensive has the intellectual property issue been?
Trump has been throwing around a number of like $300 billion, but that's just a number that's being plucked out of the air. That's something that's very difficult to quantify. Mike, thanks for your question. I think you're, for the most part, you're pretty much spot on. In our rush to get into a marketplace, and a very important market for us, it's one of our biggest growth areas, not only for the state of Wisconsin, but for the United States. I think in the rush to get in there, some companies have been a little free with guarding their intellectual property. And, of course, that can take a number of different forms. One could be just simply stealing brand, you know, taking a U.S. brand and putting it on a product that's made in China. It could be producing a generic product of a pharmaceutical, for example, that's still under patent protection. It could be taking one of our products that we send over for assembly, and through the process of reassembling, just simply reverse engineering the product and understanding the technology. And it also comes about if companies license production in China. That by doing that, they're handing over their technology to Chinese producers. And then, of course, there's the more nefarious theft of intellectual property where the production process that we're doing in China now, so we outsource production of something and we're using Chinese employees and they're stealing the technology of how it's being produced and taking it to other companies. So it's broad-ranging. It's very difficult to understand how large the amount is. However, many of the experts in this area they've acknowledged that Chinese policymakers have been trying to clamp down on this themselves and that the problem is declining but still exists. So, Mike, you're true that you're kind of spot on, and what you say is true in that it's going to turn around, it's going to hurt a different industry, and it's going to hurt agriculture and many different sectors in Wisconsin. And not only does it hurt producers and hardworking dairy farmers like Mike, but it's passing on higher costs to U.S. consumers as well.
Well, and the U.S. isn't the only country impacted by intellectual property proprietaries here. How have other countries dealt with China with this issue?
It's been very difficult, and intellectual property for the last two decades has probably been the leading concern of U.S. trade negotiators. And trying to strengthen the rule of law there is very important. And we've been able to do that through trade agreements and enhancing trade agreements. And frankly, Donald Trump has made, in my opinion, three key mistakes before kicking off this trade war. One of them was pulling out of TPP. TPP had a number of different rules and regulations on intellectual property, and part of the main reason for TPP, and remember that China was not included in that, was to form a bloc with strong rules and use that, which would have been about 40% of the global economy, use that to force China to follow the rules on intellectual property.
Let's go to, and TPP being the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, let's go to Gary now in Merrill. Gary, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. As far as the trade deficit with China, I guess it depends on who's making up the numbers, but it has been about $500 billion a year. Our total trade deficit with other countries has been around $750 to $800 billion a year, and that's been at least for the last decade. As far as hurting the farmers, we've went the last 30 years and we've closed down tens of thousands of factories, throwing people out of good jobs here, and the multinational corporations that your guest is defending has moved their operations overseas, and along with intellectual properties that were, a lot of them were paid for by the American taxpayer, so we've lost double, and I'm glad that finally that we have somebody that's going to do something about it.
Well, Gary's saying there we've lost millions of jobs overseas, and it's absolutely time that we go after China. Joe Daniels?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm not going to argue with Gary on what the trade balance is. It's actually U.S. government data that I cited earlier, which is under the control of the administration. So it's their own data source. And the deficit is very big. It has been big and has been growing since the early 1980s. Manufacturing has been under threat ever since that time period. So Gary's spot on when he said, you know, over the last few decades, he's correct. It goes back to the early 1980s. And manufacturing has faced a lot of competition. That competition comes from a lot of different areas, not just China. It's been China's growth recently that's put them front and center on the headlines. You know, for someone my age, it's very easy to think back to the early and mid-1980s, and Japan was the big concern. Japan was going to take over the country, and and they were buying everything, so now it's China because of China's rise. And of course, China's not, you know, our biggest trade partner. We have to look really at Canada and Mexico. It's the North American bloc. To think that international trade has been the main cause of manufacturing job loss in the United States is a bit incorrect. It's contributed, but the main cause has simply been technological advance. We do an awful lot more with capital and less with labor. So that's one of the main drivers, and we have to recognize that because it's very important that it's a dynamic workplace, and we need to make sure that our technological skills of our workers are up to speed. Now, the main driver of the big trade deficits that the United States has overall, actually is a macroeconomic issue. It is the big deficits that we run that generate, and I should back up and say, it's the big spending deficits that we run that generate these large trade deficits. And so whenever we spend more money than we make, we're going to run a deficit. And one of the big drivers of that deficit is actually our fiscal policies. They're way out of line. We spend an awful lot more than what we take in tax revenue. We issue a lot of debt, the U.S. government does, and China is the biggest purchaser of that debt. Right now, they're our biggest creditor, and they hold over $1 trillion worth of our debt. To me, that's the biggest problem and the biggest issue. And I'll also point out to Gary, I'm not defending multinationals. I just stated that they moved production overseas and they've outsourced. I did not defend that strategy in the least bit. It is important if they're going to have a footplace in a market somewhere that they have a presence in that market. So I could see the strategy, but I didn't defend it.
Let's go to Rick now, joining us from Park Falls. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. I just wanted to mention that one of the greatest thefts of intellectual property that we're talking about here is the theft of movies, by China. And that, in other words, they're not paying the royalties that they should on these movies. And the reverse effect of this is that the Hollywood movie industry has been continually lobbying the Democrat Party to not enforce any kind of American-style fair labor standards or environmental standards in China because they are afraid that that will jeopardize their attempt to get these royalties paid for on the movies.
So, Rick, bringing up the film industry, Joe Daniels.
Rick, you got me. I'm not an expert on the film industry. I do know that in terms of movies, music, print material, magazines, and so on, that has always been a problem for us. It's even a problem with Canada and the EU. And that's an area that is a battle that we have with many countries. There's the defense of preserving natural culture, or national culture, excuse me, mm-hmm. and excluding a lot of U.S. television programs, movies, print material, and so on. And like I said, we even see that within Canada. And I've lived and worked in Canada at two different time periods and can attest that sometimes it's very difficult to access U.S. movies and programming.
Rick, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Rick. That was a good call and a good point.
China's tariffs on U.S. goods target 128 U.S. products, including almonds, wine, and ginseng, which is facing a 15% tariff, the root in herbal remedies and teas. It's very popular in Asia. Nearly all of the ginseng grown in the U.S. is shipped to China, and almost all of it is grown in Marathon County. We're exploring what a trade war with China would mean to the U.S. economy, to the Wisconsin economy, here on The Morning Show. Joe Daniels stays with us. He chairs the economics department at Marquette. Getting your questions, your observations on an escalating trade war at 800-642-1234. Do you think the U.S. and China are making empty threats here, or do you think it could turn into an actual trade war? Are you a ginseng farmer in Wisconsin or another kind of farmer? What do you think about all of this, and how do you plan on dealing with the new Chinese tariffs. Call in, tweet us WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Fears of a looming trade war between China and the U.S. continue to rise as President Trump announces potential plans to impose an additional $100 billion in tariffs on Chinese imports. This is just after China responded to an earlier round of $50 billion in tariffs, with $50 billion of its own retaliatory tariffs. Could this escalate further? We're doing the what-if analysis here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're exploring the consequences of an event that might not occur with Joe Daniels, who chairs the economics department at Marquette. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about the effects retaliation from the Chinese could have on the U.S. economy? And if you're a farmer, how would a trade war impact you on your day-to-day? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Let's start out with Gary here joining us from Iron River. Good morning, Gary.
Yes, good morning, folks. I have two quick items. One, when we think of our trade deficit, I think it's important to recognize that in the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years, the amount of energy we've imported has dropped dramatically, and that has typically been one of our largest imports and causes a trade deficit. So it means a manufacturing deficit on goods is really getting worse since the deficit has been going up. The second one is a question. When we talk of the agricultural goods, these are world markets, and China's demand for the things is not likely to change very much. They still have the same amount of people. They still have to eat. So why don't the world markets just rejigger, and who buys from whom and who sells from to whom just change as they buy soybeans from somebody else, and then our soybeans go to where those soybeans went.
Gary, thanks so much for the call. Two ideas there from Gary. Joe Daniels?
Yeah, thanks for the questions, Gary. First of all, I really, really liked your example you gave on energy. And you're correct, if you go back a little over a decade, our biggest deficits were actually with oil exporting countries. And the conversation circulated around that. With more energy production and new energy technology in the United States, our deficits with those countries, of course, have fallen dramatically. But, as I stated earlier in the show, our overall deficit hasn't declined. And so Gary made a very, very good point about that. He alluded to manufacturing specifically, but he's spot on. The second part, in terms of world markets adjusting, Wisconsin had almost $2 billion worth of exports to China, and the growth in 2017 was pretty significant. It was over 20% from the previous year. And Wisconsin exports over $250 million worth of soybeans. And the growth in that particular sector from 16 to 17 was over 50%. Mm. So the one thing to remember is that China's a huge consumer. And they're also a very, very large country. So Gary's correct that over time we can see kind of an equilibrium being reached in global markets, but it also it pushes other producers that may not necessarily be as efficient as Wisconsin soybean growers or ginseng growers to develop their own products and serve China and thus cut us out a little bit. In terms of ginseng, we actually compete quite a bit with Canada. They're pretty sizable producer of ginseng as well. So there are other places that China can source products, and they can source it domestically. So I will disagree a little bit with Gary's second point. If we lose our biggest growth market, which over the last couple of years has been China, our exports to China from Wisconsin have been growing, not shrinking. If we lose that marketplace, it's certainly in the short run going to have a detrimental impact on Wisconsin producers.
Rose in Racine, you're with us. Hi, Rose.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Morning.
My only thoughts I just wanted to add was that everything tends to readjust, but if you're talking about intellectual property, when you're outsourcing jobs and IT and information technologies to other countries to manage for us, I don't know what else they would have expected. As for some of the other areas, though, back in the day when a company made everything in-house and delivered the product from in-house and people consumed it that way, it seems simplistic, perhaps, but it makes sense to me to try to be more self-sustaining. The ginseng growers will probably turn to growing something else if they're not selling it.
Oh, yeah.
But again,
Rose is identifying some information seepage when you outsource so much. Joe Daniels?
Yeah, Rose, I think very good, two good points. And first of all, there are some products, for example, that it's difficult to protect that intellectual property. So if I'm going to export a drug to a country, any chemist can reverse engineer that and know what the compound is. So it's very difficult to protect that. So we need agreements in order to do that. In terms of production technology, there's a very good example in the state of Wisconsin would be MasterLock. MasterLock makes a wide range of products, and some of them have very basic technology. If you think about the typical MasterLock lock you put on your garage or your shed, you know, that technology is not something that's necessarily needed to be guarded. But in terms of what they do for let's say, Marquette University, all the locking systems that we have in all the various buildings, that's very high technology, and they protect that, and they don't outsource that production. They keep it here in the state of Wisconsin, and they keep it guarded. And that's a very smart strategy to follow, and I think that's what Rose was alluding to. And so I agree with her on that. Rose also said at the very beginning that eventually things adjust, and that's true. She sounds like an economist. We say in the long run, things adjust. I'll point out to Rose the famous saying that in the long run, we're all dead. It's the short-run impact that this could have on, let's say, for example, she mentioned ginseng growers. That could be a very detrimental impact in the short run on those growers. And we have approximately 200 ginseng farmers in the state of Wisconsin. And it takes 4 to 5 years to develop a ginseng crop. And so we're not talking about an overnight adjustment process. We're talking about multiple years. And that can put some farmers out of business.
Rose, thanks. Let's go to Willem now in Colfax. Willem, go ahead.
Hello. I guess my concern about this whole issue with China is that I think our president is being disingenuous with his criticism, because U.S. companies for decades, since the Reagan administration, maybe before that, have been farming out American jobs, not for any other reason than they're chasing cheap labor, which increases their profits and, you know, suppresses labor in this country, which we haven't had much of an increase for workers' wages in 30 years. So first to Mexico and then to China, now to Vietnam. And Mr. Trump's own products and his daughter's products are made in China for no other reason than labor, and that increases their profit and increases the stock price of these companies. And that's why the rich are getting richer and working people are getting poorer. So I think it's disingenuous of the president to rally his base because they're uninformed.
Well, Willem, let's let Joe Daniels jump in at this point in this pursuit of keeping labor costs down to have the least expensive product on the market.
I would say, and thank you very much, Willem, for the call, and I thought that was a very insightful point that you made. I would say in a global economy, there's some products where, you know, we are chasing cheap labor because the margin is so thin. So if you think about some products where they're very labor intensive, but the labor is a very routine labor. And one of the examples I always use is production of a running shoe. And a typical running shoe has over 20 laced parts. And so it's very labor intensive, very hands-on. And that's been outsourced. You can take a company like Nike, they've outsourced that production. But what's happened over time is that technology has changed. And so now Nike has a product where most of the tennis shoe, a machine weaves it onto the sole. And so it's now down to three parts. And so it's no longer a labor-intensive process. It's a capital or technology-intensive product. Well, they no longer need Vietnam or Chinese labor for that. So they bring that production back home and they produce it here. But the problem is it takes many fewer employees to make that product. And the skills that the employees need to do that are much higher. It's not a very routine process now. It requires programming, knowledge of software, and so on. So it takes a higher level of training than what the workers received in the past. And those workers that have those skills are going to do better, but the ones that don't are losing out, and you see that wage gap that Willem and stagnant wages that Willem was referring to.
Willem, thanks for the call. And Joe Daniels, as we start to wrap up here, do you have any thoughts on what might happen next as we look at the rhetoric going back and forth between China and the U.S.?
That's a very good question. I think, you know, the Chinese, they'll want to negotiate. It's the way that it's being done right now that, in my opinion, it runs very counter to their culture. The Chinese, the culture prides humility quite a bit. They would rather do negotiations quietly. And so if Trump makes very bombastic statements and very big claims about we're going to do another $100 billion worth of tariffs and so on, it really works against bringing the Chinese to the table. So I'm not sure necessarily what his strategy is there. I do think a better strategy would have been to had NAFTA renegotiated, and working again. That was supposed to be done in February, and that completely passed. I think it would have been wise to stay in TPP, and I also think that it would be very smart if we brought our deficits down and we didn't rely on China to buy our debt so much. That would have put us in a stronger negotiating position to do those three things. So I'm hoping that Trump is getting that advice. And I'm also hoping that the two rounds of proposed tariffs of the two countries never come to fruition. They actually sit down and negotiate.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for making time for us.
Well, thank you, Kate. Appreciate it.
Joe Daniels is chair of the economics department at Marquette University, and he's director of the Center for Global and Economic Studies at Marquette. This hour of the morning show was produced by Colleen Leahy and Brianne Chasso. Michael Deringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and this conversation about tariffs, the relationship between the U.S. and China, you find it on the Ideas Network.